Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
Hey guys and gals, welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast, brought to you by Arrowhead Land Company. Here you will be educated, entertained, and equipped to get more out of your outdoor experience. So hold on tight, because here we go. What's up, folks? Welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast. I am your host, John Hudspeth. Welcome to the show, and this week we are just deep diving straight into hunting season. I got to actually do some hunting this last weekend, which turned out way better than I expected. And then as y'all listen to this, I will be, I'm thinking like 5 days away from leaving on my first big game hunt of the 2024 season, headed to Kansas for the opener of the muzzleloader season, the September season. So obviously I am just ecstatic, feeling a little bit, I don't know, a little bit behind the eight ball, I guess. I've done a lot of, you know, getting ready for it and everything like that. Probably going to save most of that prep for next week's episode, kind of do a hunt breakdown. But this week, well, first off, we have a really, really good guest coming up that I'm really, really excited about. Mr. Jeremy Aaron, who I found via YouTube just a couple months ago. And Jeremy does a ton of traveling around and hunting. He calls himself the do-it-yourself hunter. And ever since I found his stuff, I've just absolutely loved it. He's just really down to earth. He's all about woodsmanship. Like he hunts deer kind of the old fashioned way, gets it done a lot of the times, and he's just been doing it for a really long time. And so I thought that was kind of great timing to get him on here right before the season gets going. And before, you know, a lot of us are start traveling around to hunt. But then also, like I mentioned, I got to do some hunting this last weekend. Headed out to the ranch, got a ton of stuff done. It was a really, really good trip. So again, I'll save probably a lot of the deer stuff for next week, just because that's going to be more of a, I don't know, deer, my hunting centric type podcast. So I'm going to save a lot of that, but I did get all my feeders filled, which is good. Got all my cameras out, which is good. I did some work on my mallard murder hole, the duck hole that I'm building. We just so happened, I found out like the day before I was going up there that one of our big dozers was up there, and man, made really, really quick work of that thing. So I still got some fine touches to do. I didn't have a laser, and I really need like a skid steer to do, you know, kind of the, like I said, the fine tuning, making sure I got the right depth everywhere. But got a lot of stuff pushed around and a lot of the heavy lifting done, which is awesome. And then we got to do some dove hunting. So, man, I feel like dove hunting in Oklahoma really just isn't that big, but I love it. I've always loved it. And so my buddy Kelly came out, and then we drug my brother out of bed to come with us. And I had scouted out some birds like 2 weeks before this when I was out there, and was really excited about this one spot. There was like a dead tree next to a pond. And my brother and dad, they've been trying to do more of the regenerative ag, so they haven't been spraying weeds and stuff. And there was a good amount of birds out there. So had this spot picked out, I was like, man, we might be able to actually do pretty well. Well, we get out there this weekend, and you know, I'm riding around on Saturday, and I go to check that spot out, and my brother had moved cows into that pasture. And I don't know if dove don't like the cows, or if they were just like, the cows use that as shade tree or what, but the birds just weren't there. At least they weren't in that spot. And so we drove around a little bit, and we really just weren't seeing many other birds. Now, granted, this was kind of the middle of the day, you know, not prime time or anything like that. But we got a little worried. You know, we saw a few sitting on the fence and stuff, but just not the numbers I had seen. And so I was a little worried that the cows had screwed us up. But anyway, we were still going to go. So we wake up early Sunday, opening day. Get out there, and so it's me, Kelly, and my brother Luke, and we went ahead and still went to that spot because we figured, I figured, you know, early in the morning the cows would be out grazing, so they wouldn't be under that tree, and it worked out pretty well. I had a mojo, Kelly had a mojo, and then I bought like a half dozen super cheap decoys. I think it was like $18 for these six little foam decoys, and man, it was awesome. The dove were like actually decoying, like ducks. We had two actually like physically try to land on the mojo. And so we did pretty good there in that spot, but like, it was funny. Like, it's hard to say it's bad, but it was kind of slow. Like, it wasn't consistent. Like, you'd get a little wave, and then like 5 or 10 minutes would go by and there'd be absolutely nothing. And then like one little single would fly by and we'd shoot. And then like, here come two more. And then here comes one more. And so it was like little small, you know, singles and doubles like that. And so I had killed about a half dozen. They each had like two or something. And I was kind of, you know, looking around and watching. And I could see this other tank next to like our old corral that's all kind of grown up. And I was like, hey, guys, like, I see quite a few birds over there. I think we should move. So we picked everything up. I see everything. Actually, we just picked up one of the mojos and our stools and moved over there and did pretty good over there too. So we shot some on the way. My brother had this crazy thing happen. A bird, like, we were walking up there and this bird flew in front of us, and I was like, hey Luke, he's yours. And so Luke shot and the bird dropped, and we're like, oh sweet. And Kelly was like, hey, I think I saw another one drop. And we're like, what are you talking about? He's like, way back there in that tree, I saw something fall. And we're like, oh, you know, it's probably just a limb or something like that. We walk over there. And I mean, it was probably 75 yards away, something like that. We walk up there, and sure enough, there's another dead dove just sitting there laying under the tree. So it was funny. It was also a little scary. It's like, gosh, like, you know, these shots are going further than you think. Like, what are the odds? I mean, it had like one perfect hole, like right there in its head. So he got a twofer, which was kind of funny. We had, like I said, one dove in this spot came and actually tried to physically land on the decoy. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, wait, because I don't want anybody to shoot my decoy. Then it finally flies off. And I think Kelly shot it on like his last shot or something like that. So we ended up getting it. It was a great time. I think I ended up one shy of my limit. I think I shot 14, and the limit is 15. Luke and Kelly did pretty good. Luke had to leave a bit early to go feed. I think he got about 6. I think Kelly got about 8, something like that. So overall, really not bad. Like, I was not expecting it to be that good. We just typically don't have that many dove. But there was like a little cold front on Sunday. Like, we had a north wind. And so I don't know if that had them stirred up or what. But Luke's kids, they were actually visiting his sister-in-law. And so they couldn't come with us on opening day. But I went ahead and stayed till Monday, and me and him took his three oldest kids out Monday morning, and his son actually shot his first dove. I believe he's 11. And then we let his daughter, who is 10, take a couple shots. Unfortunately, she didn't knock anything down, but it was fun. And I ended up shooting, I think, 10 Monday morning, which is pretty dang good. And especially with the kid, like, the kids just add another challenge. Not only do you have, you know, more people talking and moving around, but like, since they were actually shooting, you know, we were trying to be nice and like, let them have at least the first shot, and then we would open up and stuff like that. So shooting 10 the second day, I was pretty darn happy with myself. So, like I said, overall, it went way, way above my expectations, which is always a good thing. So, had a ton with that. If you are not a dove hunter, man, I encourage you, get out there and try it. It's so fun. Like, you don't have to be that quiet. You don't have to be that well hidden. You can buy a Dove Mojo for like $40. And like I said, you can buy a half dozen little decoys for like, I don't know, less than 20. And they actually work pretty darn well. Anyway, very cheap, very simple, and very, very fun. Plus, like I said, it just kind of gets your hunting season kicked off a little bit early. So, ton of fun. Get out there, try it. Like I said, did some duck hole stuff, did some deer stuff. I'm going to save the deer talk till next week because I don't want to take away any time from Jeremy coming up. So, yeah, that's going to do it for this intro. Like I said, I'm going to be headed to Kansas soon. Actually, yeah, like I said, I'm going to be headed to Kansas for the next episode. I will be in Kansas. So, that's it for me. I feel like I'm just rambling now. We're going to go ahead and get into it with Jeremy, the do-it-yourself hunter, right now. Hey everybody, welcome to today's show, and today we're talking to Jeremy Aaron. How you doing, Jeremy?
Pretty good, John. Pretty good.
Good, good, man. I appreciate you taking some time out of your busy day here and jumping on with me to talk a little hunting. And man, I'm excited to have you on. I think I mentioned when I called you up that I just randomly came across your stuff on YouTube, I don't know, probably 6 weeks ago, something like that, and saw some hunts of you in Oklahoma, and man, it really stuck out to me. I feel like kind of what you're doing is different than a lot of the stuff out there, and I appreciate that, and part of the reason I do this is to educate people, and I feel like you're big on the education side, so yeah, I just really appreciate what you're doing. But before we go too much further, real quick, why don't you just give us a little introduction about who you are?
Well, like I said, I'm from Mississippi. I'm North Central Mississippi. I'm 57 years old, pretty much been retired 4 years now, so I do a lot of hunting now. I like to hunt a lot of public land, a lot of different states. You know, this year probably going to hunt probably 6, maybe 7. You know, we're mainly whitetail, but I do have a mule deer hunt. I'm probably going to leave next Monday or Tuesday to Wyoming on a mule deer hunt. Yeah, I love hunting, and I love encouraging folks to get out and hunt, especially just traveling and hunting public land, because we all own it. I look at the more people we can get to hunt public land, the more they are to protect it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Awesome. Well, let's take it all the way back to start with. What kind of got you, you know, traveling in the first place? Was it just wanting to be able to hunt more? Was it to find bigger bucks? Just kind of what kind of gave you the idea?
Well, I was very fortunate. I got to go when I was 16 to Colorado. My dad took him and his buddy, took a couple of us. We was in the 11th grade that fall. And then when I turned 20, I got to go to Montana with one of his buddies. And that sort of put a fire under me. You know, like I said, it'll be 41 years this fall, first time I ever got to out west. So I've always loved to hunt. Done a lot of the Western hunting early, you know, in my 20s and 30s. And I'm glad I did, you know, because I basically say, hey, if that's on anybody's bucket list, you're not getting any younger. The mountains can be tough. but it's a, you know, it's a challenging hunt. But that's what sort of got me started hunting out of state. I've always hunted here. I killed my first deer when I was 8 years old. This part of the country is big dog hunting country. They run dogs and they still run dogs in a lot of places here. So that's a different style of hunting. I don't really hunt with dogs, but I learned how to hunt around them, where a lot of times you get in their bottlenecks and stuff where they push deer. And I've got into filming in probably the mid to late 90s. I got in sort of filming, thought, heck, I'd make a living hunting, you know. That's what I love to do. I've always been self-employed, been in the cattle and the timber industry, farmed. So I've always worked outside. And I made it to the Outdoor Channel in 2003. Had the same show, Do It Yourself Hunter. We're doing the same thing back then, was traveling, hunting public land. Back then, we seemed showing folks exactly where we was hunting to try encouraging people. Because back then, the technology wasn't there to, you know, for apply for license, you had to mail in. You had to mail in, get application, but you could pretty much draw every year back then. So it's changed a lot. It's got a lot easier to find some of these hard places. So now we try showing people how to do it. We don't show them where to do it. You know, that's your job to get out and find your places. But there's plenty. There's, you know.
Yeah.
It's me. I think I've hunted 23 different states or killed an animal in 23 different states. There's so many places that I'll never hunt all of them again. Rest of my life, I hunt a different place. So, you know, that's one thing I encourage people today is get out of your comfort zone. Especially if you've never done, you know, public land in another state. If you really like hunting, if you try it once, it's about a guarantee you, when you're coming home, you're planning the next year for the next time you're going.
Yeah, that's awesome. I went to college in Idaho basically for hunting. I had no idea what I was going to major in or anything like that. Just went up there and tried to chase elk and mule deer and was not very successful at it. You know, it was before Onyx and all that. And I grew up in North Texas, and so the whole public land thing was just completely new to me. And I was I basically only went and hunted a place if somebody else had taken me and, you know, like showed me, hey, it's okay to go here. You know, even though I had thousands of acres at my fingertips, I was just too scared. And again, I just, you know, was afraid to get on somebody else's property. But came back home and a few years after I graduated, that's kind of when Onyx came about and, moved to Oklahoma and started hearing about all this public land and seeing some people, you know, YouTube was coming along then. And I think I bought my first point ever in probably 2014, about 10 years ago in Montana. I still yet to hunt Montana. I'm just saving them up. But I've hunted a few. You know, I went to Iowa last year, going to Kansas this year. Hunted a few other, hunted Colorado 2 or 3 years ago. And I had a sister that moved to Nebraska. And so I've gone up there and hunted on her family's land. And so I've been branching out slowly but surely. And the one thing that I found is the more you do it, the more comfortable you get with it and the more confident you get with it. And I'm sure you can probably relate to this, and I don't want to talk the whole time, but the biggest thing I found, really the first time I went to Nebraska, which would have been, I don't know, probably 4 years ago. And, you know, I had never stepped foot on that property. I drove up there, you know, I scattered on Onyx and just started walking around and finding stuff. And I was not successful that hunt. But when I came home, it made me so much more successful on my own property here in Oklahoma because of just what I learned. What, you know, because I wasn't afraid to be aggressive. I wasn't afraid to get out there. I wasn't afraid to scout and mess things up. Did you have a similar type experience with all the out of state hunting you've done?
Well, that's the main thing is confidence, and you build confidence. You know, that's what I basically say. You go to one state. Because reading deer sign is deer sign from Mississippi to Oklahoma, you know, it's tracks, it's scrapes, it's rubs. you know, you get out in that Midwest, it's more open from the country you was born in compared to ours in Mississippi now, because ours is a lot thicker, a lot more clear cuts. Mm-hmm. Closer you get to this Gulf of Mexico, you get a lot more moisture and it's a lot thicker, you know, ground cover. But yeah, that's much what I say is, you know, I basically say it's like your first out-of-state hunt's like going into the first grade. You do several of them, it's just like, it's like when you graduate in the 12th grade. Look at the difference of what you know from the first grade to 12th grade. It's a, you know, it's a building block. You build on it. Oh, and a lot of times, just like you said, you weren't successful in the Nebraska hunt. A lot of times when you're not successful, you learn from it. You learn from your mistakes and try changing up. But if you ever figure it out, can go to this state on a new piece of property you've never been on, you know, you go to it, you scout it, and you set up, and you kill a deer. You go to another state, and you do the same thing, you kill another deer, and you're like, man, I got this figured out. So, like I said, it's not exact science, but a lot of it we've learned is mainly the weather. We hunt the rut, and we hunt moon phases, you know. So we sort of use them three to really key in on, you know, it's like Daniel and I was going to Kentucky this weekend. They got a little bit of a front coming in Sunday that they may be up on their feet moving a little bit. We run a lot of cameras too, you know. We probably got cameras in five states, and we've got some pictures of some good deer, but we have very few that's daylight. You know, that's moving in daylight. Oh, and you know, it's hard to kill when they're not daylight. You know, but now when you get a rut a little later, or is when, you know, that's what we really like, it's called chasing a rut, you know, and the rut varies. I don't know how y'all is in Oklahoma and Texas and that area, but in Mississippi, see, a lot of our deer got shot out in the 20s and 30s and 40s. They had to transplant a lot from Texas and Wisconsin, Michigan. So the deer come from Michigan up north. Our rut around here is sort of that 1st of December. But right around my house right here, it's basically Christmas on. So it's different. But it's the same way. You know, a lot of times we hunt further north early, like the last week of October. You know, you can get into Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan or Minnesota, and they're rutting pretty good then. And we just chase it all the way down, you know, to Mississippi. You can, the middle of the end of January, they're still rutting in some areas, and you can get over into Alabama and chase them into the first, second week of February. So that's our main style of hunting, what we basically say is chasing a rut.
I'm glad to hear you say that also, because when I was first trying to get into the industry, just like you, I tried the filming thing and I tried the writing thing. And I wrote an article for a magazine, and it's talked about the rut and talked about how, you know, some places deer rut into January and February and stuff. And the head editor wrote me back and said, nowhere in the United States does any deer rut in January or February. And that was the last article I wrote for them. I was like, man, if you're supposed to be the guy, you know, in charge of this content, I don't think I want to work with you. Anyway, that's besides the point. Yeah. Yeah, one thing that you said that I love is, you know, no matter where you are, deer, and deer sign is deer sign. And like I mentioned, when I was watching your videos, that's one of the main things that stuck out, is because you're such a woodsman and you're kind of hunting old school and you're reading that sign. So let's say you're walking into a piece. Maybe you've done a little scouting. Maybe you haven't. What are you looking for that says, all right, this is where I need to set my stand and this is where I need to hunt?
Well, basically, that chasing a rut, we're hunting deer that's roaming. That's up on their feet traveling. So we're looking for pinch points, bottlenecks. And like I said, I hunt a lot of water, too. You know, I hunt a lot of water access. Anybody watches any of my videos much, you see I hunt out of a boat a lot, especially chasing whitetail. And I hunt a lot of, you know, sort of big river bottoms. And like I said, I'm looking like a creek comes off a river. When it starts getting shallow, deer's going to cross in that shallow spot. You know, especially if it's deep right off the river and it goes up a couple hundred yards and then it starts getting shallow, they're going, you know, deer's going to walk the easiest path. They're like a cow. I've been around cattle my whole life, so I've learned a lot about deer by watching cattle. You know, a lot of times you watch a cow when they feed. You know, cattle feed all the time. Sometimes middle of the morning, you'll just see them all laid up. You know, so a lot of time I paid a lot of attention to the moon, you know. And I didn't really figure that out probably 10 years ago. I just didn't ever really think about it. But the moon phase has got a lot to do when deer's up on her feet. And a lot of the position of the moon, not a full or new or quarter moon or something like that, where I do really like hunting a full moon during a rut. It just seemed like bucks are on their feet in the middle of the day a lot more. So, like I said, there's a lot of things I've learned over the years. I've really tried paying a lot of attention, is try to really figure it out. I kept logs for about 10 years of when I killed a deer or when I seen a good deer or when somebody else killed a good deer. I'd basically write it down. I'd write the date, the time of day they killed it, and then I'd go back and look at the moon phase and see where the position of the moon was. And I'd write the weather down, and then I'd write the barometric pressure, if it was rising or, you know, if it was holding or if it was dropping. And that's where I really learned a lot about the rut in different areas, because anytime I talk to somebody and they show me a picture of a big deer, I say, what day did you kill it? You know, I didn't want to know where you killed it. I just want to know what day you killed it, what time of day you killed it, and what was the weather like? Because a lot of times you learn a lot from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you follow the moon guide?
I do. I use HuntStand a little bit, and I use besttimetohunt.net as a website you can go to, and it'll show the whole month. And I'll look at it. Where it's not 100% exact, but it's way better than 50%. Mm-hmm. Where you can use that with the weather the rut. You know, I just want to say there's three factors. When I get all three of them, I'm going to be there. You know, when I know the rut's time of year, just say Midwest, middle of November. And the moon phase is showing it's going to be good from 8 to 10 o'clock that morning. And you had a front come through that night. That's usually the best time. You know, we kill a lot of good deer that when that front comes through, if you get real close to them, you can kill them at right when the front comes through. They'll get up and move a little bit. But usually that next day, that first and second day after, when that barometric pressure starts coming up a little bit, it just seems like them bigger deer really like to move in. Because most time you get a constant wind behind the front. You know, it'll shift out of the north. And, you know, another thing we really like to find is that 8 to 11, 12 mile an hour constant wind. There's not a lot of, you know, gust to it. It just seemed like them big deer like to, that wind being more confident, constant, seemed like they're roam better in that kind of weather.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just going to pick a random state. You know, I know you said you've hunted a lot of places, and I don't want you to give any of them away. So I'm just going to pick Nebraska because we already mentioned that state. Now, let's say you go there 1 year and you have some really good luck. You know, you see some bucks, maybe you kill, maybe you don't, but you see some good action. The next year, if you go back to Nebraska, are you going to go back to that same spot? Or are you going to say, hey, maybe I'm going to go try, you know, 100 miles away or something like that? Or are you basically like, are you always kind of trying to build your confidence in one particular area, or are you trying to build up a bunch of different areas so you have places to choose from?
I like to go a lot of different areas because my philosophy is usually when we find a real good area, it's one we just stumble in. It's a place, you know, we sort of pick and look at a new area we go in. A lot of times when we really find a sign and set up, we usually kill in the first or second set. It seemed like them big deer, you're going to kill them the first or second set. I don't know if it's because your sign's not in there and you slip in there on him. Now, I will go back to a place if I kill a big deer. I will go back. I may not go the next, you know, I won't go many times. I went to one state a couple years ago, and 2 years back to back, I killed a big deer. And doing this YouTube, I hadn't been back in 2 years because I didn't really want nobody to find it. It was more of a Midwest state that was, you know, if somebody would have showed it to me, I could have found it pretty easy after a little bit of time or two, especially if I knew the state. So, you know, one thing about hunting with a camera and doing YouTube, it's a little bit different than just regular hunting. Because, you know, I drive a Subaru car. I really like my Subaru, but a lot of folks know it now. And I got to really watch, especially if I get in there, I know where a good deer is. I got to really watch because folks, when they see my car there, they say, hey, he's there for a reason. So I may change up vehicles this hunting season.
Yeah. I understand. I'm always worried about the same thing. I don't hunt too much public, but I have been known to, you know, borrow my brother's truck or something if I'm going to one particular area or something like that. One advantage to me doing this podcast is I get to be a little selfish and you know, help myself out. So I think I mentioned already I'm headed to, you know, Western Kansas, and it's pretty much wide open as far as I can tell. Have you done much, you know, kind of plains type whitetail hunting, or are you usually going to places where you can still hunt out a tree stand and stuff?
I've done a little bit, but I usually still find I get in them creek bottoms and stuff, them cottonwoods and stuff. I still, you know, I'm a saddle hunter. Main reason I do that is for film, and it's a lot easier to film out of a saddle than it is on the ground by yourself. I plan on doing a little bit more on the ground this year. I finally got a camera I think I can film with. It's a little bit different that I'm going to try doing a little bit more on the ground because that's how I was raised around home was hunting on the ground. We would hunt on the ground with a rifle. You know, Mississippi is basically a gun hunting state. You know, you can bow hunt with it, but our ruts during the gun season and folks running dogs, it's pretty hard to bow hunt around home here. But I really like getting on the ground with the wind blowing, with a little bit of wind. Especially if it had a rain come through that night and the leaves are wet, so you can slip. Because the key to slip hunting, if you see him first, game's on. You know, you got a good chance of getting in front of him, especially if he's roaming, looking for does, or if he's chasing a doe. I've killed a lot of deer like that, just get on the ground with them, you know, with a rifle. I've killed several with a bow. But probably the last 5, 6, 7 years, I've sort of got into filming. I've sort of got away from that style of hunting because it's almost impossible to film by yourself. And pretty much everything we do is self-film.
I drew a muzzleloader tag. I thought about doing bow. I do mostly bow hunting. But just like I said, with a 2-year-old, I knew I wouldn't be able to get up there and do much scouting and stuff. So I figured I needed every advantage I get. And so hadn't been too awful worried. And also with it being such early season, I'm thinking water might be a good key. Do you hunt over water much? Are you more looking for food?
Yeah, I did draw that tag 2 or 3 years ago. It's really hard to find them deer. Because I had a Western tag too, a muzzleloader, Western muzzleloader tagger in Kansas, and they don't move a lot. You know, when hunting public, you got to find agriculture, and a lot of that public didn't have a lot of ag on it. But yeah, the ones I've seen, and I got a buddy or two out that way that does some hunting, and that's what he basically just said. You'll find water, and find food is the main thing what to look for that time of year. Yeah, we hunt some water in some spots. You know, in the south, we got plenty of water, so it's pretty much hard to hunt water here in the south. But I know the further west you get in plains, you know, water's a commodity. You know, it's
here's a question for you. I'm sure you're aware that Oklahoma has just raised its non-resident tags up quite a bit. Is that something you're seeing in a lot of places, or and how does that affect your strategy? You know, A lot of residents were very happy to see that increase to keep people, you know, out and stuff and try to keep pressure down. But I know Nebraska raised theirs a couple of years ago. I know some states are going to draw, you know, it's going from over the counter to draw. How has that affected your hunting in the last couple of years?
I do, especially in many states that I hunt. You'll just say like Kentucky, Tennessee. So you can buy your annual license. But you got to buy them a certain time of year. Like both of them, Tennessee and Kentucky, buy them during turkey season. Like Tennessee, I can go back and deer hunt on that same tag. So I do pay a lot of attention to get the best bang from a buck. Like Oklahoma, yeah, how's this done guy? This going to deter. I probably know 5 or 6 guys that was usually hunt Oklahoma and said, no, I'm not going to pay that. But one thing that will do to public land, it'll make it better, though. The less guys is hunting it, you know, deer's going to get some age on them. So, you know, You let them get a couple years under their belt, and you know these big deer start coming out of it. I hate to see them do that because, like I said, here's my philosophy: I'm trying to get as many people to get out and travel and hunt. And a lot of folks are on a budget, and when you say how much that tag went up, they can't afford it, you know. Because what was it like? Basically, about $300, and it went up to like $700.
You know, because now they make you buy the license on top of the tag.
Yeah, and the tag went up too, is what I've heard. The tag went up to like $500. It's a deer tag, and you got to buy the license on top of it. And I'm like, man, that's. And what's so bad about that? When Oklahoma does it, it won't be long. The next state joins us, they're going to go up too. Usually, when one goes up, then usually the neighboring states within a year or so, they're going to go up too. So they're going to like, well, if you're going to charge our residents this price, we're going to charge y'all this price. And it just, and they don't ever come down. They just keep going up. Yeah, hunting's going to change. I think.
Yeah,
well, like I said, I've seen hunting change a lot in the last 40 years. And it's going to change more. It's just like you said, like Nebraska. Nebraska went to a draw. Really the only thing, Iowa and Kansas is really the only two that's been a draw. But Nebraska's went to a draw. You're probably going to see Illinois and some of these other ones over time. Next 10 years, a lot of them will be a draw, about guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to see them go to buying preference points. Because they figure out they can make money on them preference points.
Yeah.
And then you got that dang point creep. You know, it's mm-hmm. like Wyoming. That I had nine mm-hmm. points. I had $450 in preference points for this mule deer tag I draw. I don't like it because it's, mm-hmm. But I understand why they're doing it.
Yeah.
They claim Wyoming makes more off of preference points than they do mm-hmm. selling license.
Hmm.
Yeah, I know.
Man. Yeah, I got quite a few points there too, and that's kind of just like Montana. I'm kind of saving up, I figure if I'm going to go, I might as well go all out. So I'm holding those in my back pocket for now. But, I don't want to be too doom and gloom. So, I want to talk, like you said, you got a passion for getting people out there. So if somebody's listening to this and maybe they've never hunted another state and they're looking to, what's the best route? Let's give them some advice on just kind of how to get started, how to get their foot in the door.
Well, I have a lot of folks ask me, I want to do it, but I don't know where to start. The main thing I say is, hey, just, you got to start somewhere. There's a state that's probably caught your eye or you watched a show on or something. Just say maybe like Ohio. You just got to do your research, get on their DNR website, check what the requirements are on license, how much they are, when the seasons are. Just do a little planning, Do a little pre-planning. We got these own eggs and hunt stand and go hunt. There's a lot of apps now that you can download to your phone, and you got to pay a prescription on them. But man, it's all right there. You can pull up in any public land there from ownership. Even landowners' names. So it's really a lot easier now than it used to be. But the main thing I just say, hey, I encourage you, if you want to do it, make the time. Make the time and plan. I know you said you got a little 2-year-old there. We got three girls. Now they're 29, 25, 23. Now they're done grown. But I was you one day. I had three little ones at the house at one time, but I still always tried to do one out-of-state hunt a year when I had little ones at the house. And just think about it. In 10 years, you've done 10 hunts. And a lot of times I tried going to multiple places. That and another thing I see how some people get started, they may have kin folks, just like you said, your sister married somebody in another state. A lot of times, these reunions and family get together and stuff, you meet some of your cousins and stuff that live in another state that hunt. Hey, pick their brains. Say, hey, do you know any public land or you got any ground I can hunt on or something like that? A lot of people get started that way. They go with kin folks. Well, that's what I'm saying. You just got to start somewhere. If you want to mm-hmm. do it, if you really like hunting, it's not all about killing an animal. It's more about just getting out and enjoying and meeting other people. I love being on new ground. I love scouting ground that I've never been on. It's just something how you walk up some of these drainages and stuff. Man, find these big rubs, and I can just sit there and reminisce. And there's no telling what's been up this holler in the last several years. What caliber deer? Because I'm from Mississippi, the hill country, Mississippi. 120-inch deer is a big deer around here. But now you can get up in the Midwest, mm-hmm. you can get a 2.5-year-old deer that's 120-inch deer. so that's one reason I guess I really got traveling for the North and Midwest is just getting into bigger sized deer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, if somebody asked me that question, it's like, man, just pick one. You just got to pick one and go. Maybe you pick a place because it's more cheaper just to try it out. Maybe you pick one just because it's close. Just go across the state line, just try it, and also check that if you're going to go the public route, make sure it has public land because there's some states you can go to and get on pretty easily, but they may not have a bunch of public land to go to, and so that's one thing. And like I said, kind of like when I went to Nebraska, just get out there. Like I said, I think I hunted 3 days, and I learned more in that 3 days than I had in my own place in probably 10 years because I was focused. Like, that's what I was there to do. And I wasn't worried about bumping a deer to the neighbors or anything. You know, I didn't know the deer that, you know, I didn't know any deer that existed. I didn't have any history with them. I wasn't emotionally attached. All I knew is I wanted to get in there, find the sign, and try to get a deer. So my big tip is just go do it. Just pick a state and go.
That's right. Yeah, you got to start somewhere. You know, you got to have a starting point.
Mm-hmm. I know you've been to so many of these states, but. So let's say somebody picks a state. We can use Nebraska if you want to. Somebody says, all right, I'm going to go to Nebraska. Nebraska is a huge state. What should they do to kind of narrow it in just a little bit?
Well, that's why I say go to their DNR. You know, most of the time you can go to their DNR and it says public land, you know, or public hunting or public, you know, some of them are worded a little different. But most of the time they'll have a map that you can click on, or they'll have a list. And most of the time they break the state up into zones. So you can click, you know, if you sort of want to go to the eastern side of Nebraska, if you want to go to the western or the southern or northern, it all comes back. You got to start somewhere. You know, it's sort of like a big block of national forest. It's hard to scout that whole block. I always break it down to a small block. I always just say, hey, I'm going to pick this spot right here, and I'm going to break it down like that's a couple hundred acre block and just scout that block instead of trying to look at a whole, you know, we got some big blocks in the south here, some national forest, a lot of big 30, 40, 50,000 acres, be big blocks. And it's hard to, you know, a lot of folks get intimidated looking at a big block like that. That's why I say just break it down to pick your spot. Just put your finger on the map somewhere and start right there. Start putting boots on the ground and then just walking, looking for sign, just like you do around home. You know, and another way somebody can get some confidence is hunt your own state. Go to a different spot in your own state. You don't have to buy a different license. Mm-hmm. You know, if you just want to sort of get your feet wet and sort of get a little experience under your belt, you know, that's what I say. Just, hey, go to another part of your state you live in and see if you'll be successful there. And then sort of stretch out to another one. And I do a lot of turkey hunting. And I do a lot of scouting for deer during turkey season, especially in new places I hadn't been. A lot of times I go turkey hunting in them areas and you know, I'm dropping pins while I'm turkey hunting on my own X. Is if I find a good rub line or, you know, find some old scrapes or something or a good crossing, you know, I'm marking that. That and riding up and down the road and stuff, I still good, you know, me and my wife, we travel a lot. We've been in all 50 states, and when I'm traveling, and a lot of times if she's driving, I've got my own X just sort of looking what public land's around. You know, that's the main reason I wanted to go to all 50 states, just to see how the ground, what the terrain and everything looked like. So a lot of times you can get brownie points. You know, that's what I basically tell, because I've been married 33 years. I'm very proud of that, much hunting as I've done. But she likes to travel too. But, you know, a lot of times in the summertime, we would travel and just go to different parts of the country. But I was sort of scouting while I was vacationing too.
Yeah, and I like what you said about, you know, just hunt your own state, because that's something I've talked about on my podcast before, because I'm sure you know Western Oklahoma and Eastern Oklahoma are completely different. I mean, might as well be two different states. You know, you cut it right down the middle with I-35 and you're in two very different places. So, yeah, just, you know, going from the east side to the west side or west side to the east side, you can have your own little mini adventure without even leaving your own state. And I know you do a bunch of camping. You can camp while you hunt. It's not that expensive. That's actually what I'm going to be doing in Kansas. I didn't realize the area I was going to was so rural, and I started looking at, you know, hotels and stuff. There wasn't any. So I'm the money I was going to spend on a hotel, I just bought some camping gear and going to be doing it that way. I'm pretty excited about that. But I don't know why I didn't think of that earlier. Like I said, I've talked about that before.
Let me get into my Subaru. Like I said, I've been doing this for a long time. I started out with a pickup with a camper on it, and then I got where I was just sleeping in the back seat of a, you know, like a double cab pickup. But for the last 3 or 4 years, I've been hunting out of Subaru, and you know, I go by myself, but I sleep in the back of that thing. A lot of time Walmart parking lots, so especially get out in the west right there that's on the off ramp of interstate, especially when I'm traveling. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times when I get around some of them WMAs and stuff I'm hunting, I don't stay in the same place every night. I keep moving around. But think about how much money you save by just sleeping in that, I'll sleep in that car this fall probably 60 to 65 nights. I've done slept in it 8 nights already since this summer. I've been on 2 scouting trips and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you can go on a – so don't think it's – you think, well, this is too expensive. I can't do it. You just got to figure it out because you can go a lot cheaper by staying in your own vehicle or camping, bring camping gear. Only thing I found with camping gear, especially traveling, you're basically going to have to find a campsite. And they're going to charge you most campsites to camp. And then you got to pack all your stuff up the next day. Where that Subaru, man, I crawl out of back, and I hop in the front, and I take off. It's all right there with me.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my original plan. But I don't have a camper shell in my pickup. And I don't know. So I went the tent route. I already had, a nice sleeping bag and all that stuff. So I just picked up a tent. And I found a spot that I can go, several different directions based out of the same camp. And so that's my plan. But I definitely think that's what I used to do in college when I was up in Idaho. I had a Jeep at the time and I'm pretty short. So I just lay those seats down and make a little pallet. And I got a picture somewhere of me in there. It had my little cheap Walmart grill and stuff to cook on. And that's definitely the way I used to do it. And I think definitely the way to go if you're going to get into it for sure. You mentioned you've killed an animal in like 26 states or something like that. Is there a state on your list you haven't been to that you're dying?
Yeah, I want to go. So Ohio. I've been saying last year or two I wouldn't want to go to Ohio. I hadn't made it that. I don't really head toward the Northeast, and there's some good hunting in the Northeast. It just seemed like the further Northeast you get in them bigger cities, a lot more population. There's still a lot of public around there. We do several trade shows and stuff, and we do the NWTF show, and there's a lot of folks from the Northeast come to it, and they say, man, you need to come hunt Maryland. You need to come hunt Delaware, and they have some good areas. They say there may be a lot of people there, but he said a lot of them don't hunt. There's a lot of them states you can kill several deer too. It's not just a single or two deer state. I think you can kill 3 or 4, maybe 5, and I think Maryland. So there's a lot of opportunity. Like I said, I love Alaska. I guess is on my bucket list. I want to go do a caribou hunt up there. I have been there and rode around in the summer with my wife. Very pretty place. Very pretty place. So it's just a long ways.
I was talking to somebody recently. I've never been. I've been to 40 something states. But I've never been to Alaska, but I keep telling people because if I go there, I'm going to kill something. Like, I don't want to go just ride around. It's I hadn't made it up there yet, but it's high on the list, too, for sure. For sure. Well, you mentioned you got several states lined. Never mind. I was going to ask you what they were, but I don't want you to have to say. So forget that question. Forget that question. Run us through them. What's your plan for the year?
Well, I'm going to probably try keying in on that Kentucky, Indiana, Ohio, or maybe Illinois. One thing, because they're close. Because I look at it, you got about 10 days of that rut that's real good. We really like, a couple years ago, I had an Indiana tag and I had a Kansas tag. And I killed a pretty good deer in Indiana, but I fooled around and went home, brought that deer home, worked it up, messed about 2 days before I got to Kansas. And I'm thinking, man, them 2 days were some of the best hunting of the year. So I really try planning is when I go somewhere, if I can tag out, I want to go to another state that's pretty close. So this is my first year really to do that, is try really keying in on that Kentucky, Indiana, and like I can go to Ohio. I do have a Tennessee tag too and drop back down there. So that's me. More of my experience, and like I said, I just got to be home Thanksgiving. I got to be home Christmas, so I can hunt anytime between then. So anytime we got weather, I'm gonna be in a tree somewhere. I'm gonna be on the ground there somewhere.
Yeah, that's a good question. Like you mentioned, when you're hunting so many states and bouncing around, what do you do with your deer meat and your horns? You carry them with you in a cooler for a couple of days, or you leave them in a processor, or how do you handle that?
Well, most time, you know, we get that question asked a lot. I've had them on ice for 2 weeks before. I killed a deer in Western Kansas, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. It got down to 10 degrees that night. I just left my cooler open that night where it froze, and it froze solid. I went to Wisconsin hunting the next week. Never did put any ice on it because it stayed froze the whole time until I got back home, probably 10 days later. So, yeah, you can keep meat on ice. A lot of times what we do now is we put the meat in Ziploc bags where the water won't get on it. We just keep ice on it and then drain the water off. I know a lot of guys say, what are you going to do with the head? Well, most of the time we just saw the horns off. I don't know if you can see behind me here, but I got a house full of mounts that I don't have no room to put any more. And they say so expensive, I'd rather buy a hunting license. But main reason we cut their horns off too is this CWD crossing state lines. You got to really, you know, if you cut that skull, you know, if you cape him out with that skull on it, you got to get that brain tissue out of that skull somehow or another. Because if you go across state lines and confiscate, you know, they don't want that brain tissue crossing state lines. So,
yeah.
So as much as we do, we just saw them off with a handsaw, carry them to a car wash and just pressure wash the skull plate. And then we're legal. And then, you know, we draw state lines with them. So, you know, that is one thing you need to plan. If you're going to go on an out-of-state hunt, you may need to have somebody, you know, especially if you kill a good one, you want to get it mounted, it may be better to get it mounted there, or you just leave it there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it was really good timing. I just went and picked up my last Oklahoma buck from the taxidermist 2 weeks ago. And so I got to ask her about it. And, you know, not that I want to set myself up for failure and thinking I'm going to kill a giant, but if I were, you know, I wanted to know what to do. And so she kind of taught me how to, you know, cut up the back and get the hide around the antlers with a screwdriver and stuff like that. And so I think if I had to, I would, or would be able to, but I'm kind of like you. I think unless it's just a true giant, I'm probably just going to go with the old Sawzall.
Yeah, because, you know, like I said, we do a lot of these trade shows, and it's sort of fun to just have them sitting around where folks can pick them up and hold them. You know, we get more, you know, because it's just something about getting your hands on one, you know, just holding it instead of just sitting and looking at him at a distance.
Yeah.
That's why I said I probably hadn't mounted in 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. Well, I want to be respectful of your time and not keep you too awful long, but anything else that we didn't touch on that you want to get out to the people?
Well, like I said, just go to our channel, Do Yourself Hunter. Like I said, we've got all kind of shows from out west stuff to deer hunting and turkey hunting and just a lot of, you know, a lot of life lessons. You know, I'm old school, like you said earlier. I like to sort of tell this younger group things I've seen. I really want to encourage these younger guys in their 20s and 30s, that's the time of prime of your life where you really work, really make some money, but set it aside. You know, let your money that you set aside make you a living when you get 45, 50, 60. You know, instead of sitting back and waiting to retire in your mid-60s, you know, you're not guaranteed tomorrow. Oh, man, I've seen too many folks work their whole life and then they die. And I'm like, man, I'm not going to be like that. And I wouldn't. I said, I had me a goal when I turned 20. I want to retire when I turned 40, but it took me just a little bit longer with the kids that's still at home. But that's one thing I really want to encourage, you know, young guys and gals out there. Plan ahead. Have you a goal that, hey, I want to do something when I hit 50, when I hit 55. But you got to plan for it. You know, you got to plan in this. You know, in May, I left Mississippi May the 15th, and I didn't come. I was on a 29-day road trip. My wife flew out there the last 10 days and met me in Montana, but I went through, I think, 14 states, drove 7,200 miles, just enjoyed life. You know, I went and prairie dog hunted, I turkey hunted, and I bear hunted, killed a bear. And then when she flew out there, we went back through Idaho and Utah and, you know, come back through the Southwest there. You know, I guess that's one thing I really want to encourage these younger folks is, you know, have a dream and work for it.
Awesome, man. That's a great message. I love it. I love it. I'm at that prime age. I need to listen to that. So I'm 35 right now. So, that's me. So, yeah. Well, Jeremy, like I said, I really appreciate you coming. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I always look at sort of like a professional athlete. You can sort of see when your prime life is. You know, you can sort of see whether their early 20s till, you know, some of them will make it to their 40s. You can really hump and hustle then at that time frame because your body can handle it. Because when you get older, your body can't handle it. You know, like I said, I was in logging for years, and I finally seen to a point, man, I love what I'm doing, but my body's not going to hold up. You know, I'm just wearing myself out.
Well, I've seen your videos, and you still get around pretty good. So I hope I'm still out there running around the country when I'm your age too.
Okay.
Well, like I said, I don't want to take up too much of your evening, so we'll go ahead and wrap this up. But one last time before I let you go, if somebody's listening to this and want to find all your stuff, where should they go?
Well, go to YouTube. I'm Do It Yourself Hunter, and check our channel out. And we got a Facebook group, Do It Yourself Hunter. You know, click on it. Daniel's got Instagram. I don't even know what his handle is. I'm old school, so I don't do the Instagram and TikTok stuff. But I probably ought to. But yeah, main thing is check out our YouTube channel where most of our stuff's at. You know, like I said, I think we got 200 some show, 270, 80 shows out. There's from a little bit of everything.
Awesome. Jeremy, thanks again. I really appreciate it. Thanks for stopping by, and we'll talk to you another time.
All right. Well, I appreciate you having me.
There we go. The do-it-yourself hunter himself, Mr. Jeremy Aaron. Thank you so much for coming on, Jeremy. That was awesome. And hopefully we inspired somebody out there to go and try something new, whether it's a new place, a new state, a new species, whatever it might be, just get out there and give it a try. So thank you, Jeremy, and thank you guys for listening and tuning in. Like I said, hunting season's here. It's kicking off. We got a lot of exciting stuff coming up. So stay tuned, get out there, enjoy God's creation. And until next week, I will see y'all right back here on the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.